This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehis Wuhib in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
South Sudanese refugees continue to cross into neighboring countries to escape violence and insecurity at home. Most are going to Uganda, where the vast majority of new arrivals are women and children.
That's VOA's Jody Kapawa reporting. Details next. Also, after the announcement of presidential election results yesterday, tensions are reported high in Gabon. And the Rwandan military shoots two smugglers from Burundi. We have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, South Sudanese refugees continue to cross into neighboring countries to escape violence and insecurity at home. Most are going to Uganda, where the vast majority of new arrivals are women and children. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
After fighting broke out in December 2013, the number of refugees and asylum seekers from South Sudan swelled from about 115,000 to around 1 million. But that figure is rising as a result of fighting and violence that erupted this past July in and around Juba. It happened despite the peace deal reached nearly a year earlier and has triggered a new flow of refugees. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says since July, more than 103,000 have arrived in Uganda, bringing the total there to nearly 334,000. The International Federation of the Red Cross is among the humanitarian agencies working with UNHCR. Catherine Gearing is an IFRC disaster management delegate who's just returned to Nairobi after visiting the Uganda-South Sudan border.
There are huge numbers of people coming in. You see large numbers of people really very exhausted with very little belongings, and a huge number of women and children, so around 87% of the people that are coming in are women and children.
She says the Red Cross is providing basic necessities.
Shelter, food, water, and a hygienic environment where they can live. Obviously, there's concerns the health of the people that are coming over the border. There have been cases of cholera that have been reported, also high cases of malaria, also elderly and more vulnerable groups, people with disabilities. You know, they're the people that we're really, really concerned about and we're really trying to help.
The Red Cross operations focus on the Bidi Bidi camp in the northern Ugandan district of Yumbe. It's one of the newer camps that's been opened because many others are overcrowded. Gearing says a priority is ensuring there's enough clean drinking water and latrines.
So at the moment, we've got one latrine for 125 people. And by international standards, we should be having one for every 25. There's a real gap between what the situation is and what we're aiming for.
The rainy season is peaking at this time in the region, making shelter all the more important. There are about 30,000 people in the Bidi Bidi camp. That number is expected to increase to 40,000 by the end of this year. The camp has a capacity of 100,000. Gearing says the Red Cross is helping to reunite family members who became separated on the journey from South Sudan.
We had a case where there were four children that were separated from their mother. Then what we're doing is ensuring we can find where the mother's location is and making sure that we can reconnect those families who are separated.
In late August, Filippo Grandi, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, visited South Sudanese in Uganda. He placed responsibility for ending the refugee crisis on South Sudanese leaders.
Peace has to come to South Sudan. The leaders of that young country have to behave responsibly and not continue to ignore the plight of their own people.
Besides Uganda, Ethiopia, Sudan, Kenya, the DRC, and Central African Republic are also hosting Sudanese refugees. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
D. Tensions are reported high in Gabon, particularly in the north, after the announcement of presidential election results sparked violence Wednesday night and yesterday. AFP reports the situation is very tense in areas near the Cameroon border, including the city of Oyem and Bitam. Some burning and looting are reported. There are also reports that some people armed with shotguns chased police from checkpoints. In the capital, Libreville, two civilians were reported shot dead, but the Interior Ministry did not confirm that. The violence broke out when incumbent President Ali Bongo was declared the winner. Opposition candidate Jean Ping had declared he was the winner prior to the announcement by the Election Commission. Media protection groups in Zimbabwe have expressed concern about police targeting photojournalists during the country's wave of anti-government protests. Advocacy groups are calling on the international community to pressure President Robert Mugabe's government to respect freedom of the press. Sebastian Mumfu reports from Harare.
On Friday, photojournalist James Jemwa was released on bail after spending a week behind bars. But the Media Institute of Southern Africa said there was nothing much to celebrate as two other journalists are still in custody and several others have been assaulted or have had their equipment destroyed by police while covering anti-government protests. Here is Nhlanhla Ngwenya, the head of the Media Institute of Southern Africa in Zimbabwe.
Media in Zimbabwe should enjoy their freedom as granted by the Constitution, not at the benevolence of state agencies. We are seeking to engage the commanders of these people who have been arresting and wantonly beating up journalists and actually express our anger and let them know that journalism is not a crime. So the fact that they are found at these protests is not because they like it there, but it's because they are answering to their call of duty as much as the police do so.
On Thursday, the Zimbabwe Union of Journalists said it wanted international bodies such as the United Nations and the Committee to Protect Journalists to plead with the Mugabe government to respect freedom of the press, which has been guaranteed in the Constitution since 2013. For the past 2 months, Zimbabwe has been hit by an unprecedented wave of anti-Mugabe government protests accusing the 92-year-old leader of failing to fix the country's economy and respect human rights. It is during those protests that photojournalists have been assaulted, arrested, or had equipment destroyed by police. In a telephone interview on Friday, Zimbabwe Information Minister Christopher Mushowe maintained his earlier statement blaming journalists for the assaults from the police.
Journalists should never, ever be part of a demonstrating mob. You should always be on the side of law enforcement agents. And that's what is done internationally. So that should those people who say they wanted a peaceful demonstration resort to violence. Yours is to take pictures and not be part of them.
This is despite the fact that video and photos have been circulating on social media showing police assaulting or chasing journalists and, in some instances, asking them to delete their work. These developments have led to media groups such as the Media Institute of Southern Africa and the Zimbabwe Union of Journalists to make an international appeal for an end to assaults of their members during anti-government protests. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The United Nations has praised Egypt for passing a law that calls for prison terms for those performing female genital mutilation. The Egyptian parliament passed a law on Wednesday which carries a sentence of up to 7 years. Those convicted of escorting girls through the procedure could be sentenced to up to 3 years. If the child dies during the cutting, the practitioner could receive a 15-year sentence. Fifteen past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization says the 4 confirmed Zika virus cases in Guinea-Bissau are not linked to the outbreak in Latin America. Genetic testing shows the Zika cases result from the Africa strain of the virus, not the Asian strain. The African strain was discovered in Uganda in 1947, and over the years, it had never been considered a major health concern. The WHO is also investigating 5 reported cases of microcephaly in Guinea-Bissau. It is known to be triggered by the Asian strain of Zika and can cause 7 severe birth defects. The Zika cases reported recently in Cape Verde have been traced to the Asian strain. It is not yet known whether infection with the African strain of Zika offers an immunity protection against the Asian strain. The World Health Organization says it is alarmed at the quick spread of cholera epidemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo and is taking emergency measures to halt the spread of the deadly disease. The WHO reports a cholera vaccination campaign is set to begin in the capital, Kinshasa, in a couple of weeks. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Cholera is highly endemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but this year an epidemic of the disease is moving with unusual speed. The WHO estimates nearly 18,000 cases so far this year. That is practically the same number of cholera cases recorded for all of 2015. Of even greater concern is the spread of the disease from the eastern part of the country, where it is normally limited, to Kinshasa, which usually is free of cholera. The head of the WHO Department for Pandemic and Epidemic Diseases, Dominique Legault, says 2011 was the last time Kinshasa had cholera. He says that outbreak lasted almost 2 years, with more than 2,000 cases and 88 deaths. He says it is crucial to hold a vaccination campaign at the start of an epidemic and that about 300,000 people will be inoculated.
The objective of that campaign, which is targeting the most at-risk areas of the city, which is a big city, it's about 5 million inhabitants in Kinshasa. The objective is to try to contain the outbreak and avoid that we have a similar situation like we had 5 years ago of a long outbreak with many cases and many deaths.
In the highly endemic areas in eastern DRC, the WHO reports a fatality rate of 1.3%. In western DRC, which includes Kinshasa, it reports a high fatality rate of 6%. Legault says there have been 13 cases of cholera and 2 deaths reported in Kinshasa since August 13th.
That's very worrisome because it affects places where there is usually no cases of cholera, no immunity of the population. The health staff is not used to cholera cases. And the additional concern we have for Kinshasa is that the rainy season is coming. Usually the peaks of cholera cases in DRC are now starting in September, October.
Legault says the vaccination campaign will be expanded to include 2 camps sheltering refugees from Burundi and the Central African Republic who are at particular risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Also in the DRC, the World Health Organization reports nearly 8 million people have been vaccinated against yellow fever in the capital, Kinshasa. They say the campaign was completed in record time, less than 2 weeks. 3 million others elsewhere in the DRC have already been immunized. In Angola, more than 13 million people have been vaccinated against yellow fever. Since the beginning of the year, the WHO has confirmed 1,000 cases in both countries with 400 deaths. In Burundi, two traders smuggling vegetables were shot dead by the Rwandan army. This incident occurred as Burundi banned the export of food to neighboring Rwanda. Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Relations between Rwanda and Burundi have continued to deteriorate since last year. Bujumbura accused Kigali of giving military trainings to Burundi refugees with the goal of attacking the country. Meanwhile, Rwanda accused Burundi of sheltering FDLR rebels who are said to have committed the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. Recently, Bujumbura banned the export of food, especially vegetables and fruits, to Rwanda, saying it wanted to improve Burundi food security. According to the Burundian police, two Burundians were shot dead on Wednesday morning by Rwandan army while smuggling food. Pierre Nkrikiye is the Burundi police spokesman.
These Burundians were going in Rwanda in night, about 3:40 a.m. It was a group of nine Burundians with bags of these products from agriculture. So they have been arrested by Rwandan soldiers, and a chief of these soldiers asked his superior what to do. He gave him order to shoot at them. Rwandan soldiers shoot at them, and two have been killed.
According to the Burundian police, seven of the traders who were smuggling food to Rwanda managed to escape and fled back to Burundi.
After the shooting, Burundi security forces went near the border to ask what happened. Rwanda soldiers also come near the border and took first the bags of these products. Second time they come and took the two the unlife bodies with them in a car, and they brought them to their position.
The Rwandan army spokesman René Ngendahimana declined to comment on the killing of the Burundian traders. The Rwandan government handed their bodies over to Burundian authorities today. They will be given to the family of the deceased for traditional funerals. Shadia is a businesswoman who used to export tomatoes in Rwanda. She says exporters have serious problems because they can't export their products anymore. She says her market was in Rwanda and used to export tomatoes on a weekly basis to the neighboring country. Shadia says that the two countries should settle their differences for the benefit of their citizens. Agriculture and livestock products are the major commodities traded between the two countries, with Burundi exporting mostly fruits and vegetables to Rwanda. Kigali says that the cost of the commodities has more than doubled over the past 4 weeks after Burundi implemented the ban. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Tensions are rising between Morocco and Polisario Front over the Western Sahara. This week, UN peacekeepers were deployed to monitor a standoff between government forces and the Polisario troops in a buffer zone near the border with Mauritania. Morocco's king supports an autonomy plan for the region, while the Polisario wants an independent republic. Mohamed El-Shenawy spoke about the situation with a former U.S. ambassador to Morocco, Mark Ginsburg.
Obviously, everybody would like to avoid there being any hostilities on either side of the demarcation line that separates the Polisario from Moroccan forces. But I also understand that as a result of the loss of leadership of the Polisario, there are new elements within the Polisario who are trying to, shall we say, show their muscle and to prove their self-worth as leaders and are seeking to provoke the Moroccan government into actions in order to draw attention to the conflict in the Western Sahara. So I hope that conflict is avoided, but the Moroccans certainly have every right to exercise self-defense as a result of any provocations by Polisario militants.
The UN Secretary renewed his call for UN-sponsored referendum on the Western Sahara future. Would that work?
I have been involved for decades in the issue over convening a referendum in the Western Sahara. There has been nothing but continuing disagreements over which groups are qualified, which populations are qualified to participate in a referendum. I also believe that the Secretary General has misstepped and has exceeded his authority under United Nations Security Council resolutions, shall we say, intervening without the active support and participation of all parties in the conflict. I think that he has made an error of judgment. I suggest that he reevaluate his position. I believe that it is counterproductive to a eventual peaceful resolution of the conflict, and so I'm disappointed in his actions.
So what's the most viable and just solution to the 40 years old Western Sahara conflict?
As someone who has been involved in this matter for some time, I merely would say the following, that the Moroccans had proposed a long time ago a very viable option, which had been endorsed by several emissaries of the Secretary General as well as the United States, and that is to grant autonomy to the Sahrawi population in the Western Sahara and to eventually incorporate them and integrate them into a Moroccan society, but providing them the opportunity to have local autonomy. Unfortunately, the more radical elements of the Polisario Front, as well as Algeria, have avoided taking what essentially I believe is a very reasonable step forward, given the fact that there's not any country that I know of, other than perhaps Algeria and some supporters of the Polisario, that believe that a new potentially failed state in Africa at a time of great terrorist threat in that region represents the right step forward. I do not believe that an independent state is in the best interest of the United States, or for that matter, anyone who's involved in trying to pacify the Northern Sahara.
So what's the U.S. policy on the Western Sahara?
The Obama administration has done quite a bit in trying to navigate its desire to see Algeria and Morocco reach an accommodation on the Western Sahara, and for the Algeria and for the Polisario to eventually agree with a Moroccan proposal, which has been refined over time with the support of a variety of emissaries, including Secretary of State Baker, to, in effect, launch an autonomy initiative that would integrate the Western Sahara into Morocco and provide the Sahrawi people with human rights, dignity, and a right to have management over their internal affairs.
That was former Ambassador to Morocco, Mark Ginsburg. He was speaking with reporter Mohamed El-Chinawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports and tune again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer Bill Workinger and our engineer Pete Hundley, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information. The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates? And what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election right here on VOA.